Taku. I'm Taku Mbudzi, and I'm sitting in my local library with my Megasaurus, who started off as my Mentosaurus, and she's my writing mentor, Kerry Q, who is a renowned journalist, blogger, and author. And in this episode, I'm going to talk to her about getting published and what it's like working with publishers and just that whole world of being a published author. So welcome, Kerry. And
thank you, Taku. Excited as always.
Just to let you know, we just recorded another episode, which I hope you will listen to, and that's about writing news articles, and we've just been laughing the whole time because, yeah, we just have that vibe. And, yeah, I'll get straight into it. So tell us how you first published or first got your book published or got your first book published.
Yeah.
Well, let me say I had an advantage. The advantage with getting the book published was that I had no preconceived ideas. I'd studied science engineering at university. I taught maths for 10 years before I turned a corner into becoming an author and news journalist. Mm-hmm. So I didn't have in my head, oh, I want to be the great writer, and then feel so overwhelmed by all the great writers out there. I'm like, eh, whatever.
Yeah.
I'll just sort of start. And I because I grew up on this little small country town with my father being the police sergeant, and it was just such a crazy time. It will never happen again, but we there were five of us kids. My mum fed the prisoners. Can you imagine? You'd walk into the house.
Are you serious?
You walk into the house and mum would put a tray in your hand when you're 10 years old and say, go and feed the prisoners. So we fed the dog, the cat, the chickens, the ferrets, and the prisoner. And
wow.
So I had many conversations with prisoners through the bars. So it was in a very old jail. I was bluestone with bars, literally. It had Ned Kelly in it, in Kyneton, Victoria. And you'd slide the tray underneath and pour their tea through the bars. So it was funny, and I just had all these funny stories. And why I knew they were funny was, when I was at university, so I went to go to university at 16, you know, I think that's my academic peak. I went down after that. Well, hey, 1969 I arrived at uni. Come on.
Yeah.
The men on the moon, Woodstock.
Yeah. Oh, gosh.
Maths wasn't quite as much fun at that moment. But, you know, so I'd go home for the weekend and come back with more stories. And I'd have people at uni rolling around laughing. And I used to be sort of a little bit embarrassed. My father used to have false teeth and wear a singlet and sit in front of the wood stove and take his teeth out. You know, even when we had guests there, you know, they just wouldn't behave. I couldn't get them to behave. Any of them, no member of the family. But suddenly I realised all these middle-class families that people grew up with were so ordinary. You wouldn't write a book about them. But mine were hilarious. So I started writing with no intention of doing anything with it. I had no idea. And then a competition came out and for humour. Now, it's not happened again. So the timing was right. But that doesn't mean you shouldn't write.
Mm-hmm.
I did win the competition. I was flown over to Adelaide and, you know, they handed me a cheque for $2,000, can you believe? And I had a little
speech.
Sorry,
what year was this? So
1982.
Okay, so back then that would have been quite a lot of money.
I was good, yes, it was good.
Right.
But, and I had a little speech ready because it was about Aussies, you know, so I'd say, you know, I'd like to give a thanks in the Aussie way. I'd like to thank my mum and dad. I'd like to thank the man that signed the cheque. And I'd like to thank his mum and dad for having him.
Oh.
Yeah. So that was the first book, but I have to tell you things that happened. First of all, you would think friends would be supportive, but no, I'd say, oh, I'm writing a book about my family. And the first thing, and I'm talking long-term friends, you know, who have been, you know, they've all got their own professions now from uni, and they'd say, you can't even spell.
Okay, so
that
the detractors
was,
start early, early on.
Yeah, that was true, to be honest.
Oh.
But I didn't let that stop me either. You do have editors, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And I had this wonderful editor, Beryl Hill, who did about 7 of my books, and she would, and see, now that we have spell check, it's much better, but she would sit me down and say, what did you actually mean when you said this? Oh, did I say that? Oh, one of the funny errors that came out in the first book, though, was I hadn't, because it's about my family, you know, my two little brothers, first snow that they'd ever seen. They ran out of their pyjamas and I had them, you know, shivering like a newborn foal. Isn't that lovely?
Yeah.
And when it came back, they had in the galleys you get, which is to check it, shivering like a newborn chicken. And I'm like, oh, no, out, no. So I put foal back in, except I put fowl.
Oh.
F-O-U-L.
Oh, gosh. Yeah.
They were right.
So you're saying, I like that as a first thing that's popped out, that don't worry about being a perfect writer or a perfect speller.
Perfect, or all the negative responses.
Yeah.
People would go out of their way, if I let them know I was writing a book, they go out of the way to say, oh, look, see that article, 40,000 people are writing novels this year. And
yeah.
Only one will be published. They love throwing those numbers at you.
Yeah, they do,
But I'm such a naive optimist, cock-eyed optimist.
Yeah,
I think,
why we're friends,
yes. I think, oh, well, I'll have to be that one,
yeah.
And
yeah.
I was,
yeah,
you see.
That's
the thing.
So how did they react after you won? What was
that
like?
I'm still in disbelief. I think I had to write 3 books.
Oh,
when I was in disbelief, come to think of it. And so I never knew, and this is, you'll find this, all of you, I never knew when to call myself a writer.
Oh.
How many books, how many articles? Because
qualify you
as
a
writer. When if you're not published, are you a writer? But if you write, sure,
I think
you're
I think you're a writer when you think you're a writer.
When you dedicate yourself
to
the
write.
Art practice.
Yes.
It's like you're a tennis player if you keep hitting that ball.
Yes.
You're a writer if you keep facing that blank screen and doing it.
I agree. I wholeheartedly agree. Because it's only in the last probably year or so after my book where I went, I am a writer. Oh, actually, do you know what it was? I applied for a grant to go on a book tour. And the feedback that I got was something like, oh, you haven't been accepted by the Writers Association of Australia or something like that, where it was pretty much saying the writers of Australia have not acknowledged me as a writer, so therefore you can't be a real writer. And I was like, no, excuse me, F you, I am a writer, because I can't not write. I have a blog, you know, with thousands of words on it. I've written this book, I have stories, and I believe I'm a writer. So then I found that quite interesting, because I think a lot of people get told, why would you?
Well, the writers.
You're not a writer.
The writers, whatever, of Australia has never acknowledged me.
Yeah.
So, you know, does that mean I'm not a writer?
No, you are.
I don't even know who they are.
But you know, that's what I thought was quite sad, is then some of these funding bodies are set up to help emerging writers.
Yes.
Right? So that's literally what they tag it as, emerging writers. But even as an emerging writer, there's such strict criteria for you to tick that if you do not believe you are actually a writer, that could put you off.
Yes, yes.
So I love that you've also highlighted these things, that you just need to know and own the fact that you write.
And also realise that you do grow as a writer the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there are articles I've published out there, and thank God they're not online. In fact, there was a whole argy-bargy with News Limited that they wanted all your back copies. Now, they were talking about 20 years of back publications to put online in their archive. And I said, no, I'll go back, because I couldn't remember what... I mean, I've got them on file, but I'm sure some of them are real duds.
Yeah.
So I was quite happy.
Selective about
Yes, I think I gave them 10 years, I think.
Yeah.
I think that was... I had to, because then they would indemnify you against being sued. That was the deal.
Okay.
Yeah, they said, we will indemnify you if you give us your archive.
Yeah.
So that's... Yeah. So it's interesting what things happen. You know,
so 10 years worth of writing, that's incredible.
Yeah, yeah.
Wait, do you feel proud about that? Or how did you feel when you then looked back on that?
Well,
when you look back on the things that you've written.
Yeah, well, I only gave them 10. I didn't give them the ones before that. Because I should check to see if they're there. But that was my judgment call of my own writing. I felt I improved so much in the first 10 years.
Yes.
There was the next. But every now and again, there was a gem in that first 10 years that now I'm really proud that I wrote. But you do learn your craft as you go. You write the first book teaches you how to write a book.
Yes, amen to that.
And so you come away from that, think, you know certain things weren't quite right, and you know you might do it a different way the next time, and you know, and it's good to be critical but not undermining. So
yes,
you've got to be self-critical in a positive way, saying, well, the next one.
And so talk us through the process of getting that story published, because that is an unconventional way, like you said, and a lot of people do that. They enter competitions, or
yes,
they put stuff
well,
out there.
A good way.
And then so then this publisher approaches and says, hey, we'll give you this much.
Yeah.
What was that process like dealing with a publishing house and everything that happened after that? So literally seeing your book on the shelves,
yes,
or having the copy in your hands. What was that like?
Well, there were many funny things. They had decided, this publisher, Rigby they were called, in Adelaide, to bring out a group. I mean, I was the winner, but from that competition they took six or so books to publish. And my first book was called Crooks, Chooks and Bloody Ratbags. And I call them the Ratbag series because, and mostly it's my family. But I can tell you what, my mum in the hometown pushed a lot of copies, I tell you, because she'd tell, you know what? She'd go around and say, you're on page 23. That really sells
yeah,
a copy, I tell you. You shipped a lot of merch
mm-hmm.
that way. So we went on tour, and this is what publishers did once and they don't do now. So they'd actually, the whole process of going through the galleys, getting them back was really
just
exciting.
Explain to people who don't know what the
galleys
are.
So the galleys are the printed form, but it comes in two pages on a sheet. So it's like an A2, a big sheet,
yes,
and it's ready for you to read through to
mm-hmm.
see if there are any errors or changes. They don't want you to have changes then because it costs some money to do it, but not so much these days.
I'm sure everything is digital now anyway.
Yeah,
it
would be easier. But you still do get the proofreads. And so you go to that stage, and then the book arrives, and that is the most exciting thing.
Yeah, how was that?
Yes,
when you held it for the first time,
oh,
what was
look,
that like?
That, I can remember it arrived in the post, and I'm just sitting there, and it was like I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe I'd done it.
Yeah.
It was just too true. Really?
Surreal.
That's
yeah.
me. That's my name. And I use my married name because I married young.
Yeah.
So I had to stay married then because it was on a book. You can't go around with a text and crossing it off every book, putting the next name
yeah,
in.
Next. Oh, I love that. Well, like strike through.
Yeah, so
yeah.
You're right for life now, you're
on
stuck
the
with you.
Yeah. That's interesting you say that, because when I published my first book, I didn't put a surname.
Ah.
Because at that time I was looking to change back to my maiden name.
Yes.
And so even now I think I'm just going to keep publishing
yeah.
just as Taku.
I think,
which
hey, no competition
simple.
With that name.
Well, actually there's a DJ called Taku.
Oh.
Like, and he's a DJ, but it's interesting.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh,
that you talk
there
about
you
that.
Go.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that shouldn't be allowed. I think you've got Taku that you own it in
wow. It's a more common
oh, yeah,
name than I
yeah,
realized.
Yeah, yeah. All right,
but
so
yes,
the
okay,
process
go
book.
Back.
So then we go on tour, and they set up a number of shows to go on. So which, and back in the 80s, it was hilarious. You could do in Toowoomba Tonight. I mean, they live in Ballarat Tonight. So for people who aren't listening from Australia, these are small regional towns out there. They're
yeah.
cities, I suppose we'd call them, but they're not large. They might be 100,000 people, right in the, you know, not close to the big city. So
mm-hmm.
you did all these amazing radio interviews with, you know, the one that sticks in my mind is 2RE Tari, Terry from 2RE Tari, talking to Kerry, Terry and Kerry from 2RE Tari, isn't it?
Yeah,
and Tari is in the middle of, I mean, it's right in the back box of Australia. So you do all these amazing tours. They set that up, and it costs them money, but it does, of course, sell books. And they also have, and the most difficult thing is distribution.
Oh, yes.
I have
yes.
spoken to the agents, so Penguin would get me to come in and talk about the book to the distributing agents, because
mm-hmm.
they're the ones you depend on the most.
Oh, I see.
Because they take the books. I mean, it is a little bit different now with online,
mm-hmm.
but the publicity is the same for getting people to buy books. You've got to draw their attention to them.
Mm-hmm.
If you just publish a book, who's
yeah.
going to buy it? Who knows it's there?
Yeah, that's true.
So I talk to the agents, and they take their samples to the bookshops, and open them up and say, oh, this is really funny, she's hilarious, and she'll be going on this show and that show.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd take in copies. And then they'd also take your backlist. Now, none of this almost happens anymore unless you're a, you know, a Harry Potter.
High flyer.
Yeah, totally up there.
Yeah.
So it's more of a struggle to sell. So, for instance, you know, middle-ranking authors could survive quite nicely in those days, the 80s and 90s, but once the online moved in, they and the publishers started targeting the high-ranking authors only.
Mm-hmm.
That
and
was harder.
And celebrities, that's a big thing.
And
because
celebrities, I mean,
now every celebrity has a book, and they know that they sell.
No, that's what
I
always thought. If I played cricket for Australia, that was my mistake.
Yeah, he'd be laughing.
Oh, I'd be laughing.
Be
then. Oh, I could write on anything.
I could
write on any topic then. It would sell. That was my mistake. But I've left my run a bit late, I think. Now in my 60s.
But then on the flip side, I think that's what gives it hope that then anyone can write.
Yeah.
Anyone can publish.
But
all.
There are a lot of boutique publishers in every country.
Mm-hmm.
Who, if you fit their list, that's what it's how. So let's go back to your writing. Okay,
yes.
You're writing a book. You go out to the bookshops and see who publishes things like your writing.
Mm-hmm.
So you get yourself a list, and you can go online and check too, because you can check on Amazon and look at, you know, see what's there similar to your own, and then you can approach them. And a lot of the small boutique publishers have access, you know, they'll let you submit in a certain, often in a certain time frame during the year, but that is how you can follow through. So you can write a book, get a manuscript, always get people to read it, because you miss typos yourself. It is so amazing. I do that.
Well, you sent me back that list and I just went, oh my gosh, this is amazing. I didn't even pick it. So
you're
right. And it makes the world of difference getting different perspectives on it.
Yes, it does.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, it really does help. So, you know, you'll have friends who are intelligent, I hope.
Yes.
who can read for a start. That's a good start.
Yeah.
And look at what you've written and be honest. Be honest without being negative.
Mean.
Well, mean, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you
want, them you to be
want
honest.
And you want to ask the right kind of friends as well. That's what I learned as well with the first one, is that I gave the book to teachers, I gave it to parents, I gave it to people who I then knew would get the book.
Mm.
And even I worked with some librarians and just people who understood the intent of my book. And it was amazing getting that feedback, because then if it's really a book that you want to share, that already starts those conversations before it comes out. And I think a lot of people just sit in their room, they write it, and then they try and pop it out and good luck to it. But then if you can start that collaborative conversation or that thing before, then you have the people who walk with you, and then it kind of opens
up. And what Taku's saying is right, because it's connecting you. I don't like to use the term network, because that...
I hate that. Me too.
I've argued with people about that. Listen, I've got friends, right? I don't have a network.
How much is your network or something like that?
No, you know what I think a network is? Hello, how can I use you today?
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
A user concept. You go and network in your industry, but if you meet people that you trust and believe in,
and genuinely connect with, it makes
sense. And so that's how you're connected into your community, through those people who you value, and they value you. So that's one way, or that helps. But I've gone into publishing. I've gone into it many different ways, and you do, even though you've published a book, you feel as if you're starting all over again with the
every
second
time,
book.
Yes.
Every time, even though they publish it and they're like,
so what was that like? So you wrote the first book and then, how did the second book come
about? Well, so then I wrote, I could have kept on writing about my family forever, but I'd changed. By the time I wrote three books in the memoirs, I'll call them the Rat Bag series, and they sold well. For a book in Australia, but I couldn't keep doing it. I couldn't keep... I had more stories because I went and interviewed police that worked with my father and all the members of the family who all wanted to tell stories about the other members of the family.
Yeah.
That's a good thing about a family that's a bit crazy.
Oh,
no,
that
wasn't me. That was...
Yeah, that was Uncle So-and-so. Yeah.
So, you know, so I had lots of stories, but I had grown then because I started writing newspaper articles as a writer, so I wanted to write different things. So that's what changed, and life changed as it does.
Oh, it does. And then, because just letting you know, guys, I've got a few of her books here, and I'm going to take some photos so you can see. Just from what I can see, you didn't bring all of them. There are about 4 or 5 different publishers or publishing houses that your books are named or were published by.
Probably closer to 8.
So talk us through the different publishers, not necessarily by name, but what you've gleaned from working with all these different publishing houses and what lessons have come out of that. Let's say somebody was now looking to get published. What were the good things? What were the not so good things?
Well, the good things were that they would take you on in the 80s as, a novice writer and then support you for a little time, you know, even though I said it was a struggle to, you know, they sort of are and arm about your second book, but you felt you had a pathway to take it. But then that publishing company collapsed, so I had to get another one, so I had to go and... approach different publishing companies, and Penguin took me on then
we have to stop there. Everybody knows Penguin. That's I love how you say that, so like, oh,
well,
you know, Penguin, but that's a big thing. So what did you say?
Well, Penguin was probably different then because the fellow in charge was named Brian Johns, and he had a policy, he had a vision, because we used to publish more books from overseas than we did Australian authors, and he had a vision of covering a great variety of Australian topics and authors.
Okay.
And you know, I only had a 30-second visit to the man, you know, the great man, and he said, "This is my vision." I said, I'm with visions.
Yeah.
I go with that way.
Yeah.
And but that was good. And then I spoke to, you know, I had some wonderful editors in there, and so. That was a very positive experience. But since then, I've gone through what everyone else has gone through because Penguin got rid of its middle list.
Okay.
They
so
just
that's...
dumped everyone. Yeah.
Oh, I see.
So I followed one of my editors. So I did have another publishing company. But things were getting difficult for all publishers. They weren't getting as much money.
Mm-hmm.
Every time, I think one of my great editors in the newspapers explained, for newspapers, every time a new magazine came out, it didn't matter, even if it was, you know, Hawaiian Golf, you know, something obscure.
Yeah.
All publications lost a little bit.
Oh, right.
So now what happens with online and free,
mm-hmm.
everyone's
and
losing.
Self,
everything. So,
oh,
yeah, so
I see.
It's becoming, so the money is much harder, it's less... before it was more, I suppose you could say, controlled, which it was, of course, but now there are no gatekeepers, so it makes it harder for publishers. They don't spend money on novice authors, on publicity tours or things like that. I mean, I had one girl for one of these books. She was just amazing, and she got me 44 interviews across Australia. I don't think I brought it here. It was called Streetwise School Smart, and she set up. So it was a book about young kids starting school. So it was for that transit and funny. It was funny about all the things they'd worry about when they start high school.
Yeah.
And she had 200 kids in a Sydney auditorium for me to talk to.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was just wonderful publicists, but they're almost gone now.
Yeah.
They're almost gone because to set that up, there's not so many news outlets.
Mm-hmm.
In Australia, when do you see an Australian author interviewed on TV?
That's a good point.
It's nowhere. Maybe a morning show.
If it's one of those,
born in Australia.
If it's one of those trendy books or celebrity kind of books.
Oh, something like
that. Do you
that.
Know what I mean? Like that's what you see. But
yeah,
I know what you're saying about just you know.
Not a novice Australian author.
No, oh no,
very
like fresh off the streets.
Yeah,
no,
it's all the high flying. They only want the top notch. So that's where it's changed. It is the distribution's harder because you know the books stay on the shelves for about 2.5 seconds, but you can sell online. So to put it sort of get the overview, you can approach publishers. That is easier now because of online. As long as you pick the right publisher, you're in with some chance. But to be published, they want you to bring an audience with them now. So you should have a blog or
something that
Instagram
shows
that you've got this following and then that...
They will invest. Because it's from their point of view, it's a risk assessment.
It's,
like, what's the risk of them inventing it? Somebody, Joe Blow, in the corner by themselves versus somebody who has, I don't know, a yogurt blog and 100,000 followers on Instagram. And I think that's really interesting that you say that because a lot of people, I'm sure, even just from the ones that I've spoken to, they're writing these things and then that's what they front, is that I'm more true to the art of writing and getting this good story. I don't have the backlog of 1,000,000 followers and all of that. What are my chances if I still approach a publisher? And that's the tricky part of then maybe your story needs to be really good or your work needs to be really good.
Well that's
it? If they see something that's good, then they won't care if you've got 2 followers as well.
There's both sides of it. And that's why I don't want to have people who are starting out writing a book feel, oh, this is a chicken and egg. I've got to have my audience before I write the book.
No.
And, it's sort of a growing thing. But author wants something to give them confidence about publishing.
Yeah.
Now, that even if the book's quality, it would be really good if you were green or something.
Yeah,
they say, we've got this green, they're just physically green author
hey,
here.
That's a lot.
Green's good.
Mm-hmm.
Green's good. Or, So they would love something odd like that, just because they can push it out as publicity.
Yeah,
it's marketable.
I see what you mean.
So there's a tragedy. But if you did, I started a maths blog because I'm passionate about the fact that we don't teach maths properly, and because I speak to teachers, that's why I did it, so I could show them how to make maths fun and interesting. For middle school mostly, and I've ended up with over 1 million hits. Well, that's.
Are you serious? I didn't know that.
Oh, over 1 million. Oh yes. Oh, my kids, my adult children think, oh, cool, mum, you've got over 1 million hits on your maths blog. Oh, I ended up talking in the International Congress of Mathematical Education in Hamburg as a humorous maths blogger.
That's amazing.
That's weird. That is just weird. What I'm saying is, if you're passionate about something, it might be, cooking chestnuts. I don't know. I wouldn't know how to cook it. But it might be something very specific, but just the same, there's a niche out there.
Yeah,
and
I think so.
That is how it grows.
Naturally.
Jonathan Green came from his YouTube clip to... They had so many followers. Jonathan Green did... I can't remember the title of his book, but he's a youth author who wrote, I should know because I've even seen his films.
That's going to bug me because
Taku's thumbs are moving like nothing on earth now. They start...
Oh, Blood Bones, Alice's Nightmare, You, Unnatural History, Fighting Fantasy.
Maybe
there's others.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I will put the link up.
YA author.
Oh, he's written
a lot
of books.
A lot of books. I've read a few of them, but the one you would know is The Night of the Karens. No. Ooh.
We're just on my phone looking through, by the way,
because
guys.
It's more, the more recent ones would be...
All right, Jonathan Green. Okay, so he
came from YouTube because was running with his brother and ended up... it was much easier then for him to get someone to publish his books and put money behind it because he already had an audience there,
mm-hmm.
even though they weren't a reading audience.
Yes,
see,
that's true.
Interesting.
If the topic is interesting enough.
Yeah. So your mission, if you want to take it on, little friends, is to write a good book, to just start up what your talent is and what your particular skills are that you bring to it, and write it, show it to people, get criticism, listen, because they're right, because you're trying to get other people to read it. It's not just for you.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you feel you've got your final product, go out and see who publishes that sort of work, find out how you can access and really do your homework. I mean, it's fun looking at all of that. And then follow the processes of how to get published.
Oh, actually, can I just jump in on that
doing
the homework bit? I think that's really important.
Yes.
Because I know for me personally, I haven't committed as much time in the past to learning and doing my homework.
Yes.
So even sitting with you like this
is
part of me doing the homework to find out, what is going to be the best thing for me. So I would just like to really reiterate that, because I self-published the last book, so that also kind of was doing homework to learn about the process of publishing. But now as you're writing, you know, more and learning about being a writer, you have to do your homework. You can't not. So even now, doing this podcast is part of my homework that is opening amazing doors around, you know, taking me further to whatever I'll end up writing about or publishing or producing. So I really just, I want to say hallelujah and amen to that do your homework bit.
And so you know, I'm nodding a lot.
you
can't quite hear it, but I am nodding because that's right. And the homework's on many levels. It's reading perhaps... If you find someone writing in your area, have a look at it. Criticise it. Because the only reason...
I heard that.
Criticise it because the only thing you need to say to yourself is that they wrote it, why can't I write?
Yes.
I mean, I'm no better than or worse than. You don't have to undermine yourself and you don't have to get big-headed about it. But it is good to take other writing that is considered so wonderful and have a go at it.
I read that recently. Some article also said read the books that you hate because they will give you a critical eye or they'll help you be more critical in terms of
you'll
write better.
Yes.
And I have a couple of books that people have been throwing at me going, oh, you need to read this, and I haven't wanted to, but now I've gone, oh, maybe I should. Because it does. It does change how you then write and also how you critique your own work.
I think it's a good idea, actually, reading books you hate. I hadn't heard that before, but I can see how that would be good, because then what you're doing, if you like an author, well, first of all, you're seduced, aren't you? You are seduced by them, and you want to read the story and think about what they're, you know, how they, you know, what the story content is. But what if you're reading a book you hate, you're actually reading the words and how it's constructed and why, and you're running into characters, you think, oh, this is ridiculous.
Yes.
I mean,
but it also, I think it also gives you breath to then whatever narrative or argument or comment you want to give. Because now you almost will have a better understanding of somebody who's your polar opposite.
Yeah. So I read Harry Potter just because it was popular. I wanted to see.
Mm-hmm.
And Lord of the Rings, you know. And see, one of my criticisms of magic and fantasy, and you know, they are still looking for the next Harry Potter.
Mm-hmm.
If you go to the, you know, YA promotion at the State Library, you'll find there are two streams of books for YA.
Mm-hmm.
One is the fantasy; it's going to be swords and shields, and
mm-hmm.
you know, all of that sort of thing, knights and orcs or whatever. And the other stream is tragedy, the girl's dying of cancer and the boy falls in love with her, and
mm-hmm.
you know, which was Jonathan Grimm. And so there's all these great tragedies.
Yes.
And you think publishers get stuck in a stream, but then that's what kids want to read too. So
isn't
you are...
That,
well, let's see,
that's the
it.
Thing. I don't know. If they have no options,
they
then that's all they'll read.
They won't take risks, the publishers.
Yeah.
So if they want to sell copy... But see, my critique, for instance, of Lord of the Rings is this. Magic is too easy. What happens is they're all in trouble. Our little hobbits are in trouble. And who comes to save them? The frigging trees!
Yeah, true.
I mean, truly, anyone can save you then. You can have the birds turn up. You can have the ants march. You can have running shoes turn up and fight. You can have water bottles. I mean, really, if you're in fantasy... And so that's my critique of fantasy. So I don't read so much fantasy because I'm there like, oh,
yeah, like that.
Now you've got all the, you know, sea creatures turning up. I mean, that you can understand why I critique it. So I should read fantasy, though, because then I'm getting actually other information. That makes me think about it.
Yeah, that is so interesting because, I'm actually, as you were talking about the trees, I remember watching it in the movie and reading the book as well.
Yes.
I loved the books because I could visualize it, but I'd never looked at it in that way. So, I reckon we should probably do a book review together.
Yes.
But we will save that for another episode. This was meant to be just about the
what
world.
What we should do
publishing.
Is take a classic.
Yes.
And pull it to bits.
In a good way. Okay.
In a good way.
Have you read Jane Eyre?
No.
Okay.
I hated reading when I was a kid. I was an outdoors kid.
Oh, okay.
Spent all the time outdoors. But I did read later. Like, I didn't read the Year 11 books, but I did read the Year 12 books.
Okay, well, I think that's a good idea. Let's do it. I'm going to have to round up this episode. As you can see, we are struggling to contain all our energy into one episode. And I feel like we're going to do a couple more. I'm not sure what they'll be on, but if you have questions, please send them through. I've had one come through from Canada. I'd just like to shout out to that person. I won't name them, but they sent me the most beautiful email saying thank you for this podcast. And, you know, the comments and messages that are coming through are just lovely. But yeah, if you have specific questions, please ask them, because then I can try and find the people who I can talk to or interview. I am also learning from this. It is just... incredible. I'm enjoying it, and I hope it's useful as well to you guys. So please start sending through comments. You can find Kerry Q in all her fabulousness on her maths blog.
Maths Pig.
And it's called Maths Pig. And you can also find her at kerryq.com.au. And you can find my adventures at taku.com.au. All my social media tags are there. But yeah, this has been Two Words with Taku with fabulous Kerry, my mentosaurus, my megasaurus mentosaurus. And we'll see you next time. Have a fabulous day.